I want to talk about the messy end of things, which is out there in the world where people are trying to implement whatever knowledge and whatever judgment they've got and make it stick. And for a few years we've been working with the local government community, particularly with the elected councillors, but also senior staff teams and their partners in localities, to try and get them ready for the changes that are taking place around public health, a much greater role given to local government for health improvement and the reduction of health inequalities, but to try and get them to the point where they could have a reasonable dialogue with their directors of public health and the public health community. We're particularly interested in the link between national policy, what local councils do, and what actually happens in the world of the various communities that constitute the local government field in an area. And it's complicated. And I learnt it was even more complicated because I had a stint as senior fellow at Warwick Business School, where in particular the question of complex adaptive systems is examined. And what I rapidly discovered was that we had a national kind of view, which was that we generate evidence and we do it in the best possible way and we translate the evidence. And there it is, folks, you do it. And of course it isn't like that on the ground. Educationalists will say that theories of education that start with a transmission model really don't produce as much as theories that start with the notion of both co-creating and exploring the nature of the knowledge, and sometimes co-producing it, actually taking some ownership for the shape of it. So my colleague Jean Hartley at Warwick University, for example, studied something called the Beacon Scheme. And the Beacon Scheme was an attempt to catch people out doing good things and then try and explore what it was they were doing that was good and then try and distill it and spread the influence. And it's not surprising that what she discovered, looking at all of these various awards that had been given over a 10-year period, was that very few places took the learning and applied it immediately in the form in which it was given. They either took the learning and applied it to something else, or they took it and applied it and customised it. And her expression was, we may not be reinventing the wheel, but we're certainly customising the wheel for every team of staff, for every community that we're working with. And that's part of the task, part of the challenge. Now we have an absolutely wonderful organisation in Nice, and it has a very strong public health wing, and it is helping us to understand what you can say with some reliability around certain subjects. But the dilemma about it is that the local municipalities and local government units aren't under an obligation to implement the NICE guidance in the way that our National Health Service was for issues around pharma and medical technologies. And it's quite an interesting kind of mixture of cultures. The people who generate the distillation of evidence and the people who have to use it and how they then interact. So I thought I'd run through just some of the examples and some of the issues associated with that. But my starting point is we can talk about the evidence, but the evidence is one part of a process. Along with it goes the professional judgment about which evidence brings to bear on a particular area in a particular place, and we all know that. There's another kind of rationality in our local scene in England, which is the political rationality of our local elected members, who are becoming increasingly important in the public health field, and the way in which they absorb knowledge and use it. So the interesting sort of point about that is that in general, actually, they do pretty well, and we've been helping them sort of to find their way through some understanding as lay people of the nature of the knowledge. But we shouldn't be surprised, because it's there in our psychology. If when the evidence says something we don't like, we reject the evidence rather than change our opinions. And that's the big kind of issue that's hidden in the midst of all of this. Now, I'm going to run very rapidly through Some local case studies. So I'm going to try and set the scene as well about the national changes, because we're not that familiar with them, because they're new for us. I think they're probably unfamiliar to many people here at the conference. So I've no declarations to make. I'm not, certainly today I'm not in anybody's pay at all. I wanted to talk about community competence, and the ambiguity in the question is whether it's about the communities developing the competence or public health practitioners developing the competence with others to work with them. We have this rather curious sort of half and half thing in England. We believe desperately in community engagement, community involvement and community empowerment, and we do it by central direction because we're a highly centralised state, and that sets some kind of issues about how we use our knowledge. Greenwich is an outer London borough with all the features of an inner London borough, a desperately poor place. And they took up Health is Everyone's Business and took all the senior staff and the middle-level staff through a primer about the nature of public health, the nature of health improvement, the nature of health inequalities, and the big killers and other related health issues for their area. And it sounds very straightforward, but they had a problem selecting the evidence that they would use, and the question was really what level of depth did people need to understand the messages? How much did they need to get into the complexity that the directors of public health would normally deal with? The crucial thing was they used the evidence that they gathered around something that interested them as part of this as a vehicle for learning around projects. And they made the evidence their own by doing some applied work in their own particular field. And whether these were spatial planners or the chief finance officer, or whether there were people who were working in social care or in neighbourhood offices, they all got involved in that. And it was really quite fantastic to see. But they were struggling with, all the way through, okay, we can rely on this evidence as being authoritative, but what does it mean around here? What do we do with it? But I think it's an example, really, of a place that's tried systematically to get the whole of the council team to be thinking about that issue. We've taken to Sir Michael's work, and we're really very, very keen on getting into the wider determinants. But we are in this strange policy landscape. The hospitals are sucking in money. Health for All is still quite distant. The ambulance is at the bottom of the cliff waiting to drive off to the hospital, and we haven't got enough of the signposts and fences at the top, but we're doing better than we were. But we're in trouble. And so we're engaged in these difficult financial times in a major attempt to restructure what we do. And I'll come on to talk about the health and wellbeing boards, because they will be our prime customers for evidence. Or rather, I'll put it another way around, if the local health and wellbeing board, which is charged with creating the local strategy, can't understand the evidence, weigh up what to do on the back of that, then we will be in some significant difficulty. Second example, we're familiar in England with a lot of schemes that are about helping you to improve your own health at neighbourhood level. But this was different. What this was about was getting local ward councillors and the people they represented and the professionals who worked in that patch, maybe 10 to 15,000 population, so cross-section of local people, involved in finding out everything they could possibly find out about health in their area. And to get to that, they went into NICE, they went into Cochrane materials, they ploughed through some of the journals, but again, what they were doing was getting this sort of attempt to develop the fingertip knowledge that was particular to the place they were in, but trying to draw down from these much higher level and perhaps more universal studies. What we discovered was that the simplest way of getting a lot of the material across was through bar charts and mapping. Now that shouldn't surprise anybody, but the maps told very powerful stories, and they were the basis for people developing their own maps on top of what they were hearing. We're in the midst of this transition. Health inequalities is a feature of the legislation, properly, I think, for the first time, and we should give credit to the Coalition for that. And local partnerships are seen as the key to making the improvements. mobilising across the sectors in a particular local area. These are just some of the building blocks for our new system, so you can look them up a little bit later on. But it sets a bit of a challenge, because some of the safety of a central system is being in part dismantled, and under the financial pressures a lot of the key staff are moving around and there are a lot of gaps around. So the question is, how do we keep this sort of focus on understanding what it would be most beneficial to do in an area? I'll pick a third example. Calderdale is an area that's made up of small mill towns and a lot of open countryside and a lot of sheep in Yorkshire. And they produced their local maps. They used a lot of national data. They got into the literature around ethnicity and health because of a Bangladeshi and Pakistani population who were much more likely to be seriously ill than other people in that population. And they used what was called the Joint Strategic Needs Assessment, which every area has to have, as the basis for very localised thinking about, well, what are the health problems around in this part of our area? It was linked to something called Healthy Towns, which is a sort of small-scale version of Healthy Cities. And they looked particularly at the sort of question of overweight in the area. And they became actually quite proficient at challenging some of the evidence and trying to understand it an awful lot better. And it did lead to some practical results. But it wasn't a straightforward issue of them just reading the evidence and thinking, now we know what to do. They really had to work it through. In our new system, we've got to make the health and wellbeing boards and the primary commissioners of health services, the clinical consortium, mainly led by GPs, work together and work with their local communities. And we've got three different types of ways of thinking going on, or at least three. We've got to pick up what, in general practice, is the nature of knowledge, what the public health world would say is there about populations and sections of populations, and then what people inside the Health and Wellbeing Board would constitute as a persuasive argument for doing one thing rather than another. So that's the challenge. And this broadly is what the Health and Wellbeing Board is there to do. It's there to narrow health inequalities and improve health, promote service integration, because we have this big divide still between the local level of service and the National Health Service, and improve productivity. So there are quite a few challenges. The thing at the end of the day is to mobilise for action, but you want to do that on good understanding, and that good understanding then needs to be based on whatever evidence is pertinent and readily available. And we have a problem. Jenny Poppe, Professor Poppe, from now I think from York University, but from Lancaster previously, did a study for NICE around community development for health. And it was a major study, looking at, in meta terms, at everything that could be found. And there was disappointingly little, because the people who researched community development previously hadn't thought to research health in connection with it. And the people who were researching health at local level hadn't really looked too much at what community dynamics might be about. So the short answer in terms of the nature of the evidence is that there may be very little that would be really first-class evidence. But the expert consensus of the group that Jenny gathered was the strength of the community is really important for health improvement and the reduction of health inequalities. But that's a matter of judgment rather than a matter of scientific evidence. And it's a belief, I think, and it's a belief that we all share. The Health and Wellbeing Board has got this huge challenge to take what is known, apply it inside an area, and connect it to the nature of the knowledge that is produced by local people thinking about what their health issues are. So it really tests this notion of translation to the limit, and it makes us think hard about what our educational models might be like. And we discovered this within the Healthy Communities Programme at the LGA, which is working mainly with the elected members and with their senior staff, but many others. Simply presenting evidence doesn't convince, but helping people to spend time working through with their peers and applying ideas in situ and then coming back and talking to their peers is a much more powerful way of learning. I think we know that, but it's worth putting this in, because an awful lot of the discourse around translational medicine, for example, sounds very straightforward and linear. But the world that we're in is actually much more complex than that. And to an extent, it's only as they get into doing it and doing it together that they work out which bits of evidence seem to be relevant. Our new system has five big assumptions. I'm going to finish just with these as questions. Our clinical commissioning groups are designed to counteract the effect of the pull into hospital, the unnecessary and inappropriate pull, maybe for a quarter or more of the patients. And lots of questions about, will they be strong enough to do that? And they will need to rely absolutely on good evidence about the options in communities and non-hospital settings, and know that they're speaking on really firm ground to be able to hold that back. It's assumed that the health and wellbeing boards will lead a local health and wellbeing movement, but that has to be a directional movement, and it has to have knowledge and evidence behind it. And the worry will be if we get the movement without the evidence, or without at least good professional judgment. It's assumed that the health and wellbeing boards can mobilise quite significant numbers of people around health supportive behaviours and to get upstream into the wider determinants. But there's still an awful lot unknown about quite how those wider determinants bear on behaviours and how those behaviours bear on health status. And then the bottom one is that this system will allow local communities to be much more empowered around the co-creation of health. But the link between the community understanding in the way that I described the Nottingham experience, what the evidence says about their area, and their empowerment is pretty obvious. But it's the thing that we very, very rarely do. So I'll just finish on that note, that our particular task has been to take the knowledge and use it, but also work out which knowledge and what on earth to do when there doesn't look to be the knowledge and evidence that you'd need to act on this scale. So thank you.